Wisconsin Governor Jim Doyle has made promoting the bioeconomy a major part of his energy independence agenda, and his budget includes $30 million for bio project loans and grants. He's got $5 million for cellulose research, another $4 million for venture capital, and $1 million for new E85 and biodiesel pumps. The POWER initiative is what we're going to be talking about. It's called POWER, is an acronym for Promoting Our Wisconsin Energy Resources. And Judy Ziwak, our guest today, is director of the State of Wisconsin's Office of Energy Independence. And it was that office was created, welcome, by the way, Judy.
Thanks. Oh, thank you. Good morning, Larry.
Just created when? This
April 5th.
By executive order to advance Governor Doyle's vision for energy independence. So you've been a busy person here.
Indeed.
Four months and counting. So tell us what you're working on.
Well, thank you for having me, Larry. It's a very important mission that the governor has given the Office of Energy Independence. When he, through executive order, created the office, he gave us three goals, his vision and mission. And again, those are rather daunting, that Wisconsin, by the year 2025, will get both of its transportation fuels and its power, or electricity, from renewable sources.
Wow.
That's goal number one. It's called the 25 by 25. Many in the country are following and using those milestones. Second major goal is that the governor would like us to capture 10% of this emerging market. And what we mean by that is both if they're going to be wind turbines, we would like to manufacture those in the state. Bioproducts is going to be potentially a huge global market. And by that, we mean substituting our petrochemicals in plastics and many products with sustainable sources. So the governor would like us to make sure that we're getting positioned to get 10% of the market. And then finally, he would like Wisconsin to be a national leader in research and create high-paying jobs from all of these opportunities.
And you should have all that done by what, December or so?
I think so. Putting the strategic action plan together to...
Yeah, how are you attacking this anyway?
Well, I like to start with numbers. And let me give you the numbers I'm working off of.
Sure.
We'll take the transportation fuels. By 2025, we anticipate we would need, and again, it depends on what assumptions and the mileage our vehicles are getting, but if we stay on course, Wisconsin would need to produce about 1.1 billion gallons of biofuels to run our automobiles. And then, managing a little cold here. And then on our power sector, right now, we do have a state, by statute, our utilities are working to get 10% of our power from renewable sources by 2015. That would put us at roughly 77 gigawatts of power. But by 2025, we would probably have to triple that and get to like close to 21,000. So again, your earlier discussion about energy efficiency comes into play. How efficient will we be? Therefore, that will change sort of what we need to reach by 2025 in terms of our power generation and renewable resources. So given those major goals, I think the good news, if we start with where we are now, in our biofuels, our greatest production right now is ethanol from corn. And Wisconsin will produce about 250 million gallons by the end of this year. With our production capacity that we know is online, we could project by 2025, we will be producing corn ethanol at about 732 million gallons per year.
So you're about two-thirds of the way there.
Then if we bring in biodiesel, currently made from either soybean or vegetable oil, right now our production capacity in the state is about 52 million gallons per year. And again, what we know is coming online potentially is about 173 million. gallons.
Okay.
So that gets us about 800.
Yeah,
so,
a little over 800 maybe.
And that is all before we get to what people are waiting for. The breakthrough is ethanol from other feedstocks.
Yes.
And the race is on for cellulosic ethanol. So it's ethanol from corn is what we know today, ethanol from woody biomass, ethanol from switchgrass. Those are all opportunities that we're looking at, researching, and trying to get positioned for.
It's is this what we call all these? Would they be biomass? What is biomass?
Well, biomass is an organic matter. Mm-hmm. And our organic matter here in the state of Wisconsin is our plant, our vegetation, such as switchgrass, even corn, corn stover, agriculture waste, manure, forest waste. There's chips, there's treetops and limbs that are being left in the forest as we harvest for our, you know, our logging industry, for the paper industry.
And our forest industry is huge in the state.
It's huge. Up north, this is a huge potential as a, using that waste wood and getting it into a value-added chain for our fuel. And then there's urban waste. Quite a bit of things going into our landfills right now that we probably need to invest and use it as a source of fuel. So that we consider woody biomass, such as surplus construction lumber that might go into a landfill. We need to capture some of that.
Not the shrubs that I want to get rid of.
Yeah, possibly. Give us, you know, work with the university. We could probably figure out a way how to mulch it, ferment it, or boil it and get it to into a fuel.
And speaking of, let me give the phone number, by the way, if you'd like to join in. I haven't given that yet. I hope you will as we talk about promoting our Wisconsin energy resources with Judy Ziwak, Director of the State of Wisconsin's Office of Energy Independence. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890. 263-1890, or email us at talk@wpr.org. And just in terms of the research, of course, we've got some great funding coming from, as a result of some work by the College of Ag and Life Sciences at UW-Madison.
Absolutely. They made my number three quite easy when the university very successfully became one of three centers in the United States funded by the U.S. Department of Energy. And they won a $125 million grant for 5 years, I believe it is, to look at our bioenergy crop future.
And that's going to be absolutely huge, I'm sure. The Clean Tech Partners, formerly known as the Center for Technology Transfer, has $500,000 in grants. We were talking about trees and forestry.
Right.
From the Forest Research and Development Grants Program. And can you talk a little more about that?
Again, I think this is one to note is a lot of investment from the federal level is coming out to states and particularly the Midwest. Wisconsin, when you look at our, if you will, our competitive advantage in feedstocks, fuels of the future, Wisconsin has more wood than, say, Iowa or Illinois, who are going to probably concentrate on corn and soybean. So the Clean Tech Partners having this $500,000 as seed capital to start some of that work that we need to do up north. And how do we aggregate tree limbs and treetops that are left on the forest and bring it to market? What kind of pretreatment is going to be necessary? Again, if you're going to use it for as a coal substitute, how do you measure the BTU content? So if you're delivering it to the utilities, they know exactly what the substitute is, how much they need. So all of this work is just getting underway in the state, and the money from Clean Tech will help jumpstart some of that work up north.
Got to be exciting to be involved in
Absolutely.
This. Absolutely. Really exciting. So many good things happening and sort of cutting edge. And
very hopeful.
Yeah, I'm very hopeful. That's the best part of it. That's the best part of it. Wade in Green Bay, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Wade. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Actually, it's kind of funny. I work with Walmart. I'm an assistant manager, and we have a program that's our personal sustainability program that where we're trying to get all of our associates and actually even the general public in our stores to participate in programs that would support what you're doing right now. And I guess what I was calling in interest is to how to contact you so that we could either help or participate or find a way to support you in some way. We do it as a store-by-store basis, so it would be individual stores.
That would be wonderful, Wade. Appreciate your support and interest. Well, we're a small office, so I'm going to give you my direct line at the risk of everybody will be calling me directly. But feel free. It's my direct phone line is 608-261-0607. If you wanted to send me an email, it's Judy, J-U-D-Y, dot, and the last name is spelled Z-I-E-W-A-C-Z, at wisconsin.gov. So any way you can help, as Larry asked earlier, how do we go about doing this at the state? We're going to need people at all levels, from their personal homes to businesses to communities, to participate if we're going to meet the governor's very ambitious 25 by 25 goals.
Yeah.
So thanks for your interest.
Wait, did you get the numbers and so forth?
No, actually, unfortunately, I'm driving. I had to stop, pull over real quick and try to find a piece of paper. What was that number again?
It's 608-261-0607, I believe.
Correct.
Okay.
And it's Judy.ZIEWACZ, ZIEWACZ at wisconsin.gov.
Wonderful.
That's wonderful. Thanks, Wade.
Thank you.
Hope we get some more people saying, hey, we can do that in our business, too.
Absolutely.
we want to hear some more of that. Janet in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Janet.
Hello. My comment or concerns that we're not using human energy in our culture enough. We've turned so much to the machine. And the way we change this is to go back to how we train people. I mean, these ideas that we take the forest clippings, that forest needs those clippings for nutrients for the next generation. That's not a good idea to burn that up in cars running around. But we are so trained as a people to be under the clock and under the rat race. And if we would change our school system that it would not give credit for time, our K through 12 system right now, the children get credit for 180 days for third grade, 180 days for fourth grade. And it trains people to a machine-like time existence of both of them working and everybody running around and one person in a car. And we really need to back off and just relax how we're living. We're in an information age. So many, many of our people out there, their jobs are just shuffling information. The Sunday paper, I throw half of it in the garbage when it's...
Well, I tell you what, because we're running out of time here, Janet, we'll tell you what, we'll have Judy Ziwak give you some comments after we take a look at the news here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for calling. Talking now about the Power Initiative, promoting our Wisconsin energy resources with Judy Ziwak, Director of the State of Wisconsin's Office of Energy Independence. Pleased to have her with us and happy to have you listening in. Certainly, if you have questions as we move along today, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. And Judy, the issue has been raised. Let's take something like research on forestry, where, okay, we go in and we take away all of the slashings and we're going to use that for fuel, but then what happens to the forest? Because the forest may need that for its own reproduction and regrowth.
Yes. Janet made a very good point, Larry, and we are concerned about maintaining healthy forest. So in all things we do, we have to balance what's perhaps a surplus. We'll have to measure, balance what might be surplus. And I think to assure everyone, I forgot to mention that in the governor, when he gave me the large goals, also asked cabinet secretaries to be around the table working on these very issues. So we do have a cabinet team working on it to make sure that we bring that knowledge and concern from the Department of Natural Resources. So their Division of Forestry is very much aware of the need to establish guidelines to maintain healthy forests. I also have the Secretary of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection with that knowledge of what we must do to manage our acres and nutrient management and protect, make sure our water stay clean. Also have the Secretary of Commerce around the table, financial institutions, and the chairman of PSC. So the issue that Janet raised is a valid one, and we're concerned. But again, we need to go to work on it and see what either stays or gets put back to make sure that we maintain healthy forests. One thing I would add, I think it's interesting when the head of the Forest Products Lab here in Madison, I believe he uses the number, in this country, we spent about $1 billion fighting forest fires last year across this country. Now, that's fuel of one sort, and it's a lot of investment in fighting that fuel. So I think our challenge is, can we maintain a healthy forest and get good policy where we figure out how to harvest that and use it fuel for our homes versus just up in the air and then we spend a lot of money fighting forest fires.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, Cornelia in Wauwatosa, we give you a chance now. Let's see, hold on a second here. Hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, I'm here. Judy, you must have the most exciting job in the state.
I do, thank you.
I have a couple of questions. I understand that there's a justifiable fear that the extensive land use to generate enough corn and soy for biofuel will lead to high increases in food prices, as it's taking up a lot of space. And I'm wondering if perhaps the research needs to also look into creating better, clean public transit and other options, such as supporting neighborhood businesses so that people don't have to go so far to shop, maybe not even have to drive. And the third segment is, are you consulting with other countries who've been successful in this regard, like Germany, for example?
Mm-hmm. All right. Good questions.
Great. Thank you. Pressure on food is a concern, but actually our corn production, our yields are increasing, so we're getting better yields in the corn. Our ethanol plants have become increasingly more productive, so technology is helping us. But the pressure on food is a concern, but probably right now the greater pressure on food costs is actually the cost of gasoline to get food to market in our petrochemicals and packaging some of that food. But it is being carefully monitored, and again, I think Dean Molly John has a team working on that, and economists down at the university. But certainly, relying solely on corn and soybean is not going to be our future. It's what we know today. And I personally like to celebrate what farmers have given us, which is hope that we can get off foreign oil. Cornelia, on your transportation question, that is another component. What kind of car should we be driving in the future? There are some who say plug-in hybrids. If you have it and you plug it in overnight and where the demand for electricity is down, you could potentially, if you only drove 40 or 50 miles a day, you could go 1,000 miles without one drop of fuel in that vehicle. I had an opportunity, a man from Illinois came up on last Friday with his little electric car, 6, 7, 8 batteries, I guess. We had an opportunity to drive it. If you stay under 25 miles an hour, again, there's not a drop of fuel used in that vehicle. So there are our transportation challenge down the road is going to be a very mixed portfolio of options from what kind of fuels we use, and it's going to get beyond corn and soybeans. I mean, for instance, biodiesel right now out in DeForest here in Wisconsin, they're making biodiesel from waste oil from rendering of animals. Now think about that. You're avoiding landfill and animals.
I was thinking more in terms of mass transportation rather than having so many people have to get into cars every day.
Yeah. You're right, and that has to be part of our policy deliberations. And I think some of those issues for Wisconsin are being addressed through the Governor's Global Warming Task Force, and we're looking for, by the end of the year, have recommendations what we can do in the mass transit as well. But you're absolutely right. We have to have a lot, and I think your neighborhood shopping and trying to manage how far people have to go is an excellent idea.
And I know where I'm pretty sure that we've been looking at other countries. Cornelia mentioned Germany, but there are other countries that are doing some pretty interesting things.
Yeah, absolutely. European countries are generally ahead of us. I know in terms of using woody biomass to create electricity, I'm hearing that Finland is pretty far advanced. I have not had the opportunity or luxury to go and visit these in person, but I do hear about it and talk about it, and we try to keep track of it. I just read the other day where, you know, China and other Indonesian countries are trying to get to a new feedstock for fuel. China is one of the pressures in terms of our current use of oil. So the degree other countries are looking at alternative fuels, we can both learn, and it takes the pressure off prices on petroleum as well.
Yeah, makes sense. Cornelia, I thank you very much for calling. I want to give some others a chance to get in here, but appreciate your call. And we turn to Tom and Valder's next. Hi, Tom. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. See, I had an acquaintance, if you will, that was selling artichokes as a fuel stock, as a crop to grow. And what they were going to do is harvest this and send it up to Minnesota to a big ethanol plant. Unfortunately, my buddy got ripped off because the people left, you know, took off with the money. No. But what their deal was that this artichoke would grow very high, had a lot of sugar content. They could harvest it, and it would produce a lot of ethanol. And another thing about it was, because you don't harvest the complete crop, you leave some behind, kind of like potatoes, if you will, and it regrows, so you don't have to replant it every year. And it sounded, I mean, he sold quite a few acres of it, never got paid for it, but he sold quite a few acres of it. And I was just wondering, has you ever heard of anything? Does indeed artichokes create more sugar, and would that be a good stock? And
mm-hmm. All right. Well, Judy, what do you think?
Well, thank you, Tom. I have to be honest, I hadn't heard of artichokes to date. But it's not surprising. I mean, many plant, you know, sugar beets, they're grown in the Dakotas and western Minnesota, are, again, what is ethanol? Ethanol is taking sugar from a plant, fermenting it, and getting to ethanol. It's an old moonshine technique, you know, this alcohol we put in our vehicles. So anything, you know, Brazil has become pretty much energy independent for transportation fuels by relying on sugarcane. So thank you for bringing artichokes to my attention. I think we send that over to Dean Molly-John and Tim Donahue, who are doing the energy, bioenergy crop research. And I think the other consideration we'd have to look at is sort of the acreage and the Wisconsin climate. I think there are many opportunities, including probably potatoes.
Yeah.
That we everything's on the table. We're just going to have to figure out what's cost effective, feasible for farmers, equipment, harvesting, planting, and getting to market. So thank you for bringing artichokes to my attention.
Thanks, Tom.
Just so you know, that was back in the mid to the mid 80s to the late 80s, and I think they could even use the potato harvesting type product. So
yeah. Unfortunately, there are some unscrupulous types out there, and I'm sorry that your friend took it on the chin. But thank you very much for calling. I want to go to Ron in Madison next. Ron, hello to you.
Thanks. Like the earlier caller, I oppose converting edible food that humans can consume directly into fuel, whether it's corn, soybeans, sugarcane, or anything else that we can eat. I have three suggestions for better efficiency and renewable energy for Wisconsin: water, trees, and trains. Someone else already mentioned trains being much more efficient. We need to cut back on the cars, SUVs, trucks, and also airplanes, and use trains for both passenger and freight transportation to be much more efficient. And if we can come up with, they already have hybrid trains, which are diesel engines and electric drive motors. We may be able to substitute other fuels for the diesel in those trains. Water is probably the greatest resource that Wisconsin ignores. It can be used, substituted for air conditioning. Instead of running compressors, consuming lots of electricity at peak times of the day, and leaking freon into the atmosphere to destroy the ozone layer, use direct cooling, just the cold water from shallow wells, from lakes deeper than 40 feet or so, from right out of the soil and the bedrock. If you put in loops of pipe, you don't have to actually have a high water table. You can get by with a closed loop system. And trees, when you're talking about energy from trees, probably the best system would be to harvest whole trees. That is, to cut off at, you know, 2 inches above the soil, broadleaf trees, probably not the conifers, and then let them start do this during the summer when they're fully leafed out, and let them lay down in the sun for a few weeks. Let the dairy cows and dairy goats eat all of the dried leaves and twigs that they wish to, and then take the rest of the tree, anything that's more than about 8 or 10 inches in diameter can be used for lumber and other forest products. The smaller stuff can be cut up into firewood or chipped and further dried before it is fed into the coal-fired power plants as our best renewable energy source. So the three big ideas that we must include.
Well, Judy, a comment from you?
Good suggestions. I think given our challenge, my assumption is we are going to have a lot of exciting opportunities and suggestions that the state can look at, follow, and put into mix. We're not going to have one solution fits all. Appreciate your comment about we edible food for fuel. That again, is a concern. We have a starting point now, and we need to move to other feedstocks in the future. You mentioned water. I was waiting for you to talk a little bit about sugar water into hydrogen, because that's sort of one of our cleanest fuel sources probably for the future. So, again, I thank you, Ron. Transportation, again, it's a huge issue that we all need to tackle. And so much of this, I think, is probably the best way to say is people are interested. The attention is there. There are many choices people can make. And the state is looking at all sorts of things. So we have a mixture of policy and opportunities and alternative ways to get around, to heat our homes, to get to our daily lives.
Thanks, Ron, for calling. Appreciate it. Tom in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Oh, you're welcome. Here's a couple points. I called in to talk about ethanol, and all I'll say there is I'm not sure that corn is a reasonable alternative for ethanol. But since then, I've decided probably to talk about something that's a little bit politically incorrect, but that would be nuclear power. If we were to try our best to consume nuclear power and look at the big picture, we'd see that it's no more hazardous to the environment than all the other sources that we use. And it'd be very important that we stop using fuels that we are using today, because they are so incredibly valuable and their resources will end. And the other thing we could do if we were generating electricity with nuclear power is our excess electricity, and we can do this today too, just that we don't have much excess right now, is we can manufacture hydrogen with excess electricity and power our cars. And that's also a reason that we should encourage nuclear power. And I would beg you to please research this and try to convince the governor that it is a reasonable alternative. In fact, I believe it will happen, just a matter of time. And while we're waiting, we're wasting incredibly valuable fossil fuels.
All right. Thanks for calling. And I can tell you that at the University of Wisconsin, there's actually, in engineering in particular, there's quite a bit of research going on nuclear energy. But Judy Ziwak, comment from you.
Well, thank you, Tom, for the comment. I think, again, the option that's certainly in the mix. I think, you know, the governor, when the day he announced the Office of Energy Independence, was asked that question. He said, you know, it's not off the table. But I don't think Wisconsin's probably going to be the first to bring new power plants online. And there is need to look at it. And I think we have the expertise here at the university. So, again, will it be part of the mix? Possibly. Are we ready to go there right now? Probably not. But again, I think when we all look at these incredible goals to get to energy independence, many things have to be considered. So I appreciate your pointing out that as an option, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. John in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. I was curious as to the amount of water resources used to make a gallon of ethanol out of corn or what.
Boy, John, I'm sorry. I don't think I can give you that right now. Sorry.
I mean, you have ballpark figures? I mean, I've heard that it uses quite a bit of water to make a gallon of
water. Well, you're talking about the ethanol plant itself. I mean, not the crops and growing, you know.
Correct.
So how do you start?
Well, I guess you have to figure everything in a way. You have to take the whole picture because, you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it uses quite a bit of water as far as from what I've heard.
Yeah, Tim. If we had Tim Donahue here, he'd have that answer right off the top of his head, I bet.
And again, I think the issues about ethanol production and these plants becoming more efficient is I know the technology and the plants, they're trying to become closed loop, where they actually use their own waste streams to generate their own power, so they don't have to rely on natural gas or electricity to actually power it. And I believe there, you know, the discussion about recycling the water as well, so that there's a first-time draw, but after that, you get recycled and use it in your plant. So I'm sorry I can't answer specifically what we know today versus can we make them closed loop in the future.
We're going to, and we're, I should let you know, John, that we'll be doing, for quite a while now, we'll be doing probably once a month or so, we'll be having experts in to talk about a whole variety of these issues, and certainly that's one that is bound to come up, you know, within the next month. So I hope you'll stay listening for that. And Judy can't have the answers to everything.
Maybe another 4 months. But.
Another 4 months. December, when we've got all these problems solved, yeah, as we were talking about earlier. Don in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Don.
Hi. There's an old adage that he who does not remember history is doomed to repeat it. My suggestion is that you do some considerable reading and research on the word artichoke. What you're talking about is a plant known as Jerusalem artichoke. It's marketed in supermarkets and that sometimes as sunchokes. It is, the name is a misnomer. It's not an artichoke. It has nothing to do with Jerusalem. It was truly a, it was originally a native North American plant, and it was harvested by Native Americans as a food source. I'm a retired physician. When I was in medical school 50 plus years ago, it was mentioned in books as the diabetic potato, because the starch that's in it is, I believe, inulin, which bypasses the Krebs cycle and does not require added insulin, so it had some advantages. But back in the fuel crisis in the late 70s or early 80s, there were quite a few farmers in Minnesota who were literally conned into planting fields and fields of Jerusalem artichokes because the tubers could be used to make ethanol. As a fuel source. When the crisis was over, those farmers were stuck with a plant which they could not get rid of. And I assure you, if you're a gardener like I am, if you ever think of planting Jerusalem artichokes, you should ask yourself, do I ever want to get rid of it?
Yeah, do I ever want to get rid of it? I do recall some of what you're talking about, Don. And but just to think about this, I my guess is that it'll still be on the table, because if you compare 1970, for example, to 2007, there's been a lot of research and a lot of new things that have come by on the board to maybe make that crop a valuable crop. And with that, I appreciate the call, and I want to give Darwin a chance to get on here as we're running out of time. Darwin, hello, in DeSoto.
Good afternoon. I'm sure we've all gone through our history classes in high school. Can we compare our existing condition today with the Mediterranean Gulf, way back from Egypt all the way up to Italy, where they had a beautiful, lush garden like we do here in Wisconsin, and they turned it into a desert for the same reasons we're doing now with our ethanol and biofuel. We're just converting our grasses into sand in the long run. This is ridiculous. Why can't we use the sun and the wind and all the free stuff instead of giving them, you know, the profit money to the corporations?
Well, Judy, I'll be about out of time here, but the comment from you?
Well, I think, you know, sun, we really didn't get to some other, beyond transportation fuels, what we're going to use to heat our homes, power our businesses, our schools. And again, I think solar is an opportunity. We're going to have it in our portfolio mix. Again, Tim Donahue at the university is doing some interesting research on using microbials. So, I want to assure Darwin that we don't want to become a desert. We like our Wisconsin landscape the way it is. We haven't even talked about capturing manure from cows. That's one of my all-time favorites. And so we're going to be creative, and I think we're going to be mindful of our environment. And if we have a balanced approach, again, not one source, be it corn. Corn is what we know today, but we're working hard to get to, you know, switchgrass. Now, mm-hmm. an example of switchgrass, question, do we want to grow it for cellulosic transportation fuels, or do we want to use it to heat our homes? 1 acre of switchgrass, if we put it on our conservation reserve acres and use that as sort of a stabilizing crop, bioenergy crop, 1 acre of switchgrass can provide enough electricity power to heat a home for a year. So all of this is very exciting. We're inching our way forward to find solutions. And again, want to assure everyone that our beautiful Wisconsin landscape has both an opportunity, but we also have to be stewards of it.
And Judy, just if you got a website, could you give us our website for people?
Power.wisconsin.gov, I believe it is.
Power.wisconsin.gov.
Right.
Judy, thank you so much. Judy Ziwak directs the State of Wisconsin's Office of Energy Independence. Pleased to have her along. And as I said, once a month or so, we're going to try and take a look at some of these other issues that we've talked about today as well. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.